Well, you were saying before I had to change the tape, Clarence, that the cases that came before the masters were brought by or were based upon formal complaints. And excuse me, the masters were appointed by the chancellor.
Right.
Well, in your opinion, did that serve, did that effort overall serve to clear up most of the problems?
It helped a great deal. Because the masters tried to take a sensible view of the situation. And if we were presented with, say, a young lawyer who had put a few dollars in his pocket from an estate and we could get it settled, why, we would do so and that'd be the end of it.
Would the attorney be reprimanded in any way? I guess.
Well, you got the private reprimand, you got the public reprimand, you got the disbarment for a period of years, and disbarment for life.
Yeah.
And it'll depend on the measure of
the severity.
Severity of the, of
well,
the offense. The,
in this case, saying, as you were preparing a moment ago, a minor case, more or less, and there might have been a private reprimand, would that have come from the chancellor, from the judge, the court, or the bosses?
Well, it would usually come from the masters. It would be in our report to the chancellor.
I see.
We'd recommend what is to be done.
20 years ago, say, that would put us back to the 60s, there was a feeling that the bar here did not adhere to the highest sorts of principles. I don't mean the whole bar, but there were too many members
mm-hmm.
which did not. Do you think that it has, that situation has changed in the subsequent years?
Oh yes, I think in the last, well I think the special masters had something to do with it, but of course now all conduct of all ethics matters is done by a committee appointed by the Supreme Court of Tennessee. And it's out of our hands entirely here. Bar Association has nothing to do with it anymore.
I see. Is there a standing committee to that effect, or is it appointed only as needed to investigate some?
It's an official, I might say it's an official bureau
of the
Supreme Court of Tennessee. And they, each, I don't remember now what the exact routine of it is, but they appoint this committee for a period of years. And in some cases, I don't think they can succeed themselves. And then they employ investigators. And these investigators make their report to the committee, and then the committee makes a report to the Supreme Court. And periodically we get a notice from the Supreme Court that so-and-so and so-and-so has been disbarred for life or whatever the disciplinary action was taken. And it's a wonderful thing, although I think the special masters finally did a pretty good job in Chattanooga.
Well, it would appear that special masters probably served particularly well because they were local people who knew the local situation.
Oh yeah, yeah. And another thing, Charlie Noon, you probably remember him, was one of our good lawyers, and he was criticized a whole lot by some lawyers, but he left a fund to be used in helping lawyers who well, couldn't help themselves, provided their condition was not caused by liquor. And that fund is, of course, it's $20,000, and it's being used every year right now, all the way. It's a permanent fund.
Who administers it? Who administers it?
He provided that the president and secretary, I believe it was, of the Bar Association administered.
And is the money available in loans or grants or both?
Well, I don't know of any loans that have been made, certainly grants.
Yeah, I see.
And he provided that no lawyer could get the benefit of it more than 1 year in succession, I believe a provision in it. And that started, he got that idea when I was president of the Chattanooga Bar. This was right after World War II, and we had a widow of a former president of the Tennessee Bar and one or two lawyers who were about starved to death. And one of them was a Negro lawyer who was flat on his back. And some of us got together, mainly with Mr. Noon, and he had the money. And there was another lawyer, too, that had been president for 2 years of the Chattanooga Bar that was almost on starvation. And we raised money to help them. And that's where Mr. Noon got the idea of leaving this trust.
This was just simply a matter within the Bar Association itself, because its members knew of the situation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. In fact, I remember that I was somewhat active. In fact, I may have suggested it. I don't remember now whether I did or not, because I knew the situation. And this Chattanooga, well, at least two lawyers, one of them alive and one dead, were great lawyers, but they had just reached the point where they just didn't have any practice anymore. And that's happened to a lot of lawyers in Chattanooga, that no matter how good they were in the prime, they just finally reached the point where they couldn't make a living. Of course, the big firms now usually take care of that, but I'm talking about those are mostly individual practitioners in those days.
Yeah. In addition to your work with the Chattanooga Bar Association, you served as president of the Tennessee Bar Association.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I've been on a number of committees of the American Bar.
Mm-hmm.
Did those experiences give you any special insights or directions from which you might act here locally? Did they present any sort of thing that you could bring back and apply to the Chattanooga? Or was it a...
That's possible, but I can't recall anything.
Yeah.
Because this was on a state and national level. And, of course, it's true that after this episode in 1947, that catapulted me onto a national committee on family law. And my committee finally organized the section in the American Bar. And I was the second chair. I was the chairman of the committee when it was made into a section. And then I was also a delegate from the section to the American Bar House of Delegates. And then this delegateship lasted for 2 years. And the president of the American Bar appointed me on an eight-man committee to organize a section of general practice. And we organized that in 62 in San Francisco. And so help me, they appointed me as a delegate to the House of Delegates of the American Bar. And so far as anybody knows, that's the only time that's ever happened, that you succeed yourself.
Yes.
In a different section.
In a different section.
Mm.
Far
different section.
Yeah.
Now, I estimated that I've spent 10 years on bar activities, local, state, and national.
Which is a very meaningful aspect of the profession, because without it, you'd have no, not very much internal administration or functioning.
That's right. Well, it was a great experience. Let's put it that way, because it was something you felt like you were doing something for the benefit of the profession.
I know another of your very particular interests has been in the field of education. You mentioned the fact that your father was interested in education, made you go to school. But you have served as one thing I know, one of the advisory committees for the community college, State Technical Institute here.
Well, no, that came out in this way that Frank Clement appointed me on the Board of Education in 55. And that's when I learned that the paucity of education in this area, state-supported education, we didn't have any. And didn't have any within 100 miles of Chattanooga. And that's where I got the idea of recommending that the Technical Institute be established here.
Were you instrumental to, or did you work on the way in which the state administration administrative net or framework was made to handle the institutes and the community colleges and the others? Were you on the state board at that time?
No, that is before these ever came about. Nobody ever heard of a junior college when I was in the State Board of Education.
How long were you on?
6 years.
6 years.
Uh-huh. Which gave me long enough to know that we didn't have it in Chattanooga. Mm-hmm.
At that point, the State Board of Education was charged with the educational program of everything up to the university, isn't this true?
Yeah, up to the University of
Tennessee. Up to the university. Yeah. The university has always had its own
separate board
trustees.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, have you, since middle 50s and the 60s, which now is 20, 25 years ago, have you been very active locally with the development of the community college?
To a certain extent, I've kept in close touch with it. They accused me of watching every block being laid in that building up there.
Well, it's become quite a remarkable institution.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Great. Did you ever serve on the local board of education,
no,
Clarence?
No. Uh-uh.
Anything particularly about the local school system? You never were involved in that as a local matter.
No, other than when I was on the Board of Education,
yes.
I attended a lot of the local board meetings,
yes.
And which was good for us, for the state board, and good for the local boards too, because it is a source of communication between the two. I felt it was my duty to do that, and they welcomed my attendance at those board meetings.
Well, one more thing I think we ought to talk about a little bit. You have been a staunch Republican, you said earlier your background from West Tennessee was such, and you have certainly been Republican leader here over the years. What is your feeling, your reaction to the development of political matters here? I'm not talking about partisanship, but I'm talking about the interplay of the two parties. Is it are politics today managed better than politics as politics, war.
As it used to be?
As it used to be.
Oh, by all means, much better. It's pretty clean now. I'll never forget the way it used to be managed there, back in the poll tax days, you know?
Yes.
And both parties would get them, they'd go up to the trustee's office and buy a whole pad of poll tax receipts, blank. And we'd meet with a bunch of the nigger leaders and the whites, too, and give them a poll tax receipt and a drink of whiskey or a dollar or two and get them to vote in the way you want them to. I mean, it was that low down.
Very evidently an acceptance of the fact that poll tax receipts could be bought and used in that way.
They were used that way.
And there was an acceptance of that, wasn't it? Yeah. Although it was just openly illegal.
Well, of course it was, yeah.
Mm-hmm. As I recall, the law said it was against the law to be in the possession of a poll tax receipt made out to any other person or blank.
Mm. Maybe so, yeah.
But that didn't work out that way.
Uh-uh.
Well, the changes then in your viewpoint as far as local politics and the political processes has been, the developments have been to the good.
Well, I think they've been fantastic. I don't know of any criticism you can label that, generally speaking, that the way politicians run the county and city government. I think we've been very fortunate in having pretty clean men run for those offices and stand for principle.
Mm-hmm. A lot of, it's quite different from what it was in the 50s. The 50s is that period, that decade is the one in which I remember as being.
It's pretty rough.
Mm-hmm. The control wards, the poll tax, well, control of the poll tax scandals, which were part and parcel of the control ward idea,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that was one of the main things.
Mm-hmm.
I remember, too, back in the days of the paper ballots, one election, and I don't recall the year, but the election was on Tuesday. It was not until Thursday morning that the Brainerd precinct finally reported.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a feeling that was less a matter of any corrupting influence. It just showed the overloading of the slowness of it for counting the ballots. The mechanical devices have changed.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, Clarence, it's been wonderful talking to you. Is there anything else? I know the law has been your life. Anything else about the profession or about the place it's played in the development of the community that you recall? Anything else that we haven't talked about?
Well, I've always valued lawyers more on what they've done for the community, state, and nation than the exercise of their ability as lawyers. Because the legal profession is in a position to help humanity, just like a doctor is for the health of the community, like a preacher is for the salvation of the community. The three just go hand in hand. And when one profession falls down on its job, we have trouble. The founders of the United States of America were majority lawyers. And if they hadn't been, we wouldn't have had the Constitution that we have today.
Traditionally, they have been community leaders, community in the broadest sense.
That's right.
Word.
Take, I mentioned in this history, Pope Shepherd. I don't know whether you remember Pope?
Yes.
I rated him as the best all-around lawyer this bar has ever had, both on his ability, he could handle any sort of a lawsuit and did, but he remodeled the government of Chattanooga and of Hamilton County. What more can a lawyer do?
Through his influence.
And ability.
And ability, yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He was never on the bench.
No, no. Uh-uh.
He was always in private practice.
In fact, I don't think he would have accepted a job on the bench. But he was responsible for the commissioner form of government that we have in city court. I mean, in city organization. And he also abolished the JP system in Hamilton County and set up the
county council
and the small claims court judges. That is all a package. That's all in one package, you see. And I don't think we ever had a lawyer and it could have done that as well as he did.
Is there anything unusual in Chattanooga in that a number of the outstanding lawyers we have had were members of the same family, you know, brothers or cousins? Shepherd is, of course, a well-known name.
Well, his father was a judge.
Yes.
Back about 1890. Mm-hmm. That has had something to do with it, yes. Well, the Miller Martin firm, that is down to Burkett Miller, that was all family, handed down in the family. And that firm started actually at Athens, Tennessee in 1860. 1865 it was.
And this is what you said a little while ago. This is the oldest firm in.
It is the oldest firm, yeah. I think the next oldest is the Thomas firm. He came here in 1882, and that's the second oldest.
The Chambliss firm is another one in which you think of in relation.
Oh yeah, yes, and unfortunately, that family name will pass out of existence when Jack Chambliss dies. In fact, he and I have discussed it many times. And a noble family. His grandfather was not only a great judge, but a great man, personally.
Mm-hmm. Chief Justice of the Supreme Court for many years.
20 odd years. Let me just read you here what, if I can find it real quick.
This is from your
history. Yeah, uh-huh. He was a scholarly Southern gentleman, as though to the manner born, kindly, affectionate, and generous, a speaker of distinction, originality, and charm, at all times gracious and courtly.
Wonderful description. Well, are those your words?
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, they're words combined. Jack and I worked together.
Well, the Paul Campbell firm is another of a family.
Yeah, that started in 1908 with Paul Campbell Sr. and Jim Finley, Finley and Campbell. They were the first tenants in the James Building.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, they've been associated with Chattanooga history for a long time. I understand that now the Campbell firm with Paul Jr. and his three sons all in practice together, mm-hmm. is one of the perhaps one or two or three such firms in the country now.
In the whole United States.
That's right.
As a matter of fact, I think it probably it is the big only one.
Only. Mm-hmm. Three sons, yeah.
And they're good lawyers, too.
Yeah. Well, Clarence, I want to thank you again for sitting down and talking.
Mm-hmm.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, I've enjoyed doing it.
Good.